This is PCJ Radio International.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Well, hello, everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. We're really jam-packed today, so we're going to kick off right away with a company called Huawei. Now, this is a company that has made headlines in the United States and also in Europe. But recently, the Beijing government has asked for a please explanation from the Australian government over its decision to maintain a ban on the involvement of the Chinese telco Huawei in the country's national broadband network. Last week, Australia was talking up the possibility for a free trade deal with China within 12 months. But now China is unhappy with Tony Abbott's coalition government, saying the Huawei ban is a restriction on legitimate trade and is calling for a level playing field. We have this story from Stephen McDonald in China.
China's Huawei is an emerging global telecommunications giant. It makes wireless connectors, smartphones, but most importantly, large-scale infrastructure. It supplied telephone and broadband hardware to many countries. But in Australia, based on advice from intelligence agencies that it posed a threat, the former government blocked it from tendering for the national broadband network. The new government said it would review the Huawei situation, but now the Attorney General appears to have upheld Labor's position on Huawei. George Brandis said,
"The decision of the previous government not to permit Huawei to tender for the NBN was made on advice from the national security agencies. That decision was supported by the then opposition after we received our own briefings from those agencies. Since the election, the new government has had further briefings from the national security agencies. No decision has been made by the new government to change the existing policy."
The ABC asked the Chinese government what it made of the decision.
"We always oppose countries using national security as a reason or an excuse to interfere in the economy and normal trade cooperation between two countries."
Last week it was all smiles here, with both Chinese and Australian government officials promising a free trade deal between the two countries within a year.
"The free trade agreement will just turbocharge much of what's already going on."
Now there's criticism of Australia coming out of Beijing.
"We really hope that both sides could make an effort to create a level playing field for enterprises to carry out normal cooperation with a principle of market economics and on a basis of mutual respect, equality and mutual benefit."
Huawei was set up by former People's Liberation Army officer Ren Zhengfei, who worked in their Information Technology Research Unit. Australia has followed the United States' decision that his company could potentially build eavesdropping capabilities into core infrastructure, and that if push came to shove, its first loyalty would be to Beijing.
Huawei has put a huge amount of money and effort into turning around its fortunes in Australia. It has a local board with a former Australian Navy Rear Admiral, a former Labor Premier and a former Liberal Foreign Minister on it. But when it comes to the NBN, the spies would not be turned. And now it seems neither will the new government.
This could make for an interesting topic of conversation at next month's trade talks.
And that was Stephen McDonald reporting from China. Now, many of you listening right now are probably familiar with a magazine entitled The Monitoring Times. This magazine has been around for a number of years and provides all types of information on any form of broadcasting that you can imagine. Think about something and it's probably in Monitoring Times. Well, we reported a few months ago that the last published edition of The Monitoring Times is coming out in December. After that, nothing else. But what happened was one of the editors at Monitoring Times, Ken Ritz, has decided to start a new magazine, an e-magazine called the Spectrum Monitor, which is actually coming out in the heels of the final edition of the Monitoring Times. He now joins us on the program to talk a little bit about how this all came about.
That's right, Keith. That's one of the things that that happened in the last couple of months when Bob Grove made his announcement that he was going to retire. Took the whole staff, of course, by surprise, And a lot of us were unhappy to at the prospect of not having anything to write about after the December issue had finally been put to bed. And we've come to that point, as a matter of fact. We've just finished putting the December issue together, and that'll be out in another 2 weeks. It'll be at subscribers' hands, and that'll be the end of Monitoring Times. Well, the accolades just poured in to the headquarters at Monitoring Times, and it occurred to me that there was possibly enough interest in continuing a similar publication that was not associated with Bob Grove or Monitoring Times or Grove Enterprises, the publisher of MT. And so I put together a magazine. It's an electronic magazine called the Spectrum Monitor, and you can find out anything you want to know about it at thespectrummonitor.com. And if you want to find out who the writers are for TSM, I have a complete list on the website there, so just click on About Us and you'll find out who's writing. And it'll turn out to be almost everyone involved with Monitoring Times, all the columnists and feature writers that you're used to reading over the last couple of years are there, and we'll be here at the Spectrum Monitor. The first edition is the January issue, and it will come out December 15, when the January issue of Monitoring Times would ordinarily come out. So if you are interested in subscribing, we have a special price for charter subscribers, and all that information is on our website.
What's really amazing about this is, I mean, we've seen this with various different magazines, especially over the last few years. You know, they stopped publishing because there are so many different ways to get material these days. Do you think that part of the reason was because it was print? I mean, do you think, let's say, if Monitoring Times maybe 5 years ago said, you know what, we're going to do an e-version, do you think that maybe it would have continued?
No. In fact, what happened is in 1999, Monitoring Times started an electronic version and has continued for 14 years producing what's called MT Express. And it was delivered to people electronically exactly the way the Spectrum Monitor will be sent to its subscribers. But the problem is most people really still like to sit in a chair and hold a magazine in their hands, and I don't blame them. I feel the same way. The problem is that over the last 15 years, the cost of printing and publishing and distributing the entire magazine around the country and around North America is so expensive that it's prohibitive. We could not get enough people who subscribe to Monitoring Times to switch to the MT Express, the electronic version, and so as a result, as the years went by, Bob found himself unable to continue publishing the magazine as a print version and was stuck because he couldn't get enough people to switch over. So since we're starting out without any paper whatsoever, I'm hoping that we have an advantage in that respect. We're not trying to make a newspaper or a magazine that's going to be available at newsstands around North America. There's a price for that, of course, and that is you have less distribution. But we're hoping that we can gain enough of our remaining audience of Monitoring Times, and apparently we're doing that. In the last 2 weeks, the Spectrum Monitor's website has only been up for 2 weeks, and we've had a tremendous response.
There must have been some people that said to you, "What, you're going to start a magazine about, you know, a technology that nobody really cares about anymore in 2014?
Well, that's right, but you know, the thing is, people who are interested in technology, and here's what's happening in radio today. Modern computer technology and modern radio technology are merging, and with the emergence of software-defined radios, for example, all of a sudden you're starting to attract people who really didn't know all that much about radios, but they were into computers, they were into the technology of the web. And all of a sudden, they're learning about things like software-defined radios. They're learning about what you can do with them, which, of course, means shortwave radios. It means utility monitoring. It means long-wave broadcast, shortwave amateur radio. And so these are the things that we're covering. We have covered for decades in Monitoring Times, and we will continue to cover in the Spectrum Monitor. Everything from amateur radio, shortwave, Wi-Fi, utility monitoring, satellites, long wave, you name it.
So there definitely is enough material out there then.
Oh, absolutely. And that is, that's another aspect of publishing electronically, is that we're not hamstrung by a certain number of print pages that we have to fill. If we have an article that needs four or five pages to tell the story, then we can do that. If we have one that only needs a one page to do it, we can do that as well. So, you know, you can the actual publication can expand and contract with each issue according to the amount of material you need to publish. We're going to have the same number of columnists, so the basic part of the magazine that people knew as Monitoring Times will continue with the Spectrum Monitor. For instance, we've got some excellent writers who have been writing for years. Dan Bieneman, for instance, on Scanning America. We have Kurt Kleinschmidt, who's the guru for amateur radio. We've got a lot of people. We have people covering long wave. We have people writing about computers and Wi-Fi radio. So there's a tremendous amount of material to cover in each month. And I'm always amazed at how much you can fill. I mean, we can put a lot more in if we get a lot more subscribers than we can afford to put more in. That's basically what it boils down to.
You know, what's interesting is just a moment ago you said, you know, about merging two different types of technologies together. And just recently, about a few weeks ago, somebody turned me on to Perseus. And they said, you have to try Perseus. And I went, okay, I'll download the software for it. Well, guess what happened? And, you know, not too long after, I went and I had to buy a Perseus receiver.
Yes.
And it is absolutely fantastic. And it's on my desktop. And besides tuning to my own Perseus, what's nice is I can tune to any other Perseus around the world that happens to be connected at the internet at that time. And listen to something, let's say, locally, which is, it is astonishing. It's taking two technologies, one 100 years old and in modern technology, and combining the two.
Yes, that's exactly right. And a lot of people are finding their way to shortwave by way of the web. One of the things that's really interesting, and everyone talks about how shortwave transmitters are disappearing. And it's true as far as the traditional old legacy broadcasters, Deutsche Welle, BBC, and Voice of America, and so forth, cutting back drastically on their... And part of that has to do with the economy. It doesn't have to do with anything else other than it's too expensive to be running these at a time when worldwide economies are flat. But what's happening is people are coming to understand these where these broadcasts are, through Wi-Fi radio. So people who were used to listening to their local AM and FM radio station, now they have a little Wi-Fi radio on their desk, and all of a sudden they're listening to BBC, they're streaming VOA, they're streaming really esoteric little shortwave radios and AM FM radios from all over the world. So what we're seeing today is this tremendous convergence of technologies that is that's making everything just so much more versatile. And one of the things that's happening is that there are so many products out there, and this is one thing that we intend to cover a lot in Spectrum Monitor, is different products. What products are available? What products work best? For instance, in the Wi-Fi department, there are a tremendous difference between various types of Wi-Fi radios. Some of them work extremely well. Some of them don't work quite as well. Some of them work terribly. Some of them have tremendous features, such as a full-color screen that you can look at, album cover jackets and that sort of thing. And others are simply a three-line monochromatic screen. So, you know, there's a lot to know about the technology that you're getting into, and that's another thing that we're hoping to cover in the Spectrum Monitor.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, especially about shortwave broadcasting these days, is, yes, it's true, you know, there's a number of shortwave sites that have gone silent, for example, like Sackville in Canada, and most recently the Spanish foreign radio site in Costa Rica. But the sites that are remaining, I mean, we live at a time now where if anybody out there can actually put a program on shortwave, it's at the most affordable that it has ever been.
Yes.
You know, and it's kind of like okay, maybe one chapter is closing. One door has just closed, but it's like there's another door that is like opening up.
That's a really good point, Keith, and I think that that's what we're seeing. The technology, we haven't seen an end to the growth in the technology, and one of the things that's most interesting, and you mentioned the SDRs just a little while ago, a lot of people are finding that with the super-sensitive receivers, such as Win Radio, for instance, these radios not only have the capability to zero in on extremely narrow-banded frequencies, but they also have the capability of recording great swaths of RF, of HF spectrum, that you can pinpoint. So, for instance, let's suppose you are interested in a certain segment of the shortwave band that doesn't appear to have any activity. Well, you can set it up to record a tremendous amount of this bandwidth, and then come back later and review it, and you will see signals popping up here and there as you go go back through the recording, and you can find out what they are. You can take a closer look at them. Are they digital recordings? Is there something that you can do to possibly tune those in? Is there a software you can use with your computer that can decode this these programs or the data, or what is it? So it's bringing out the investigative in all shortwave listeners. This is a time. It's actually, I see it as a real new things are coming up on the horizon. Just as you say, behind us in the rearview mirror, the old things are disappearing over the horizon. But what we're seeing ahead of us is very, very interesting.
Now, I know that you probably can't say too much right now, but can you give us maybe a little bit of a scoop of what's in the first edition?
Oh, yes. We're going to have a couple of interesting stories, and one of them is about PCJ. Is that right, PCJ, the Happy Station?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in, from before World War II in the Netherlands. And there's a really interesting story about what happened to that radio station, which the title of the story is Philips Radio and the Unhappy Station. I won't give anything away on this because it's an extraordinary story. We're also taking a look at the interoperability issue, which in North America is a huge thing. As you know, since 9/11, there's been a tremendous push, which now is going into 12 years, to make all of the public service radio communications interoperable, so that you've got your fire department able to communicate with the police department, and so forth. And there's a lot of problems that have arisen in the ensuing 12 years, not the least of which is the exceeding expense of these systems, not just in money and time, but also in lives. So this is something we'll be looking closely at. We're also going to be looking at, we're having Kurt Kleinschmidt put together a Geeks Look at Radio. So we're trying to introduce people who aren't necessarily familiar with radio technology but are really up on their computers to take a look at this, what we're calling this convergence of technologies, computers and radio. And those are just a couple of things we're looking at. We're also looking at the FAA is coming up with a new system, which is partly being used in Europe right now for directing air traffic control by using satellites instead of traditional VHF and UHF ground frequencies. So we're looking at that as well. And, of course, each of our columnists will be covering their own specialties. We've got long-wave columnists and short-wave columnists and scanner columnists and everything in between.
Ken, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Keith.
And I was speaking there with Ken Ritt. He's the editor of a new magazine called The Spectrum Monitor, which is coming out in January 2014, which is sort of taking over from the Monitoring Times. And as you heard, they're going to be talking about topics that previously weren't covered in the Monitoring Times. If you want the information on how to subscribe to it, just send us an email, mnp@pcjmedia.com, and we will forward that information to you, or just do a search in Google for The Spectrum Monitor. Thank you. And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Now, if you were tuning to PCJ last Sunday, that's October 27th, this is what you would have heard.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I on? Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the fires, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime,
well, that was the very famous broadcast from the Mercury Theater from 1938 of the H.G. Wells story, War of the Worlds. It was directed by Orson Welles. Well, we broadcast this as a special on Sunday, and everything was working fine until around 14 hours UTC. Then all of a sudden, this happened. That's right, our frequency for Southeast and East Asia on 11835 kilohertz was flattened out. This was because China Radio International was on 11830, and Voice of Russia was on 11840 kilohertz. We were right in the middle. And the 500 kilowatt from China and the 250 kilowatt from Russia just flattened us completely. And this was actually a little bit of probably our fault, because last weekend, the new B-13 schedule began. I was talking this week to our frequency manager, Victor Gunatelica, about changing frequency, and we will have a new frequency for this coming Sunday. Now, we didn't have it in time yet for the recording of the show, but it will be posted at our website at www.pcjmedia.com on the front page. And also, for those who are on our Facebook page, just do a search for PCJ Media and PCJ Radio, and you will find it there. So we do have a new frequency coming this Sunday, on our broadcast to Southeast and East Asia. So just like I said, you'll be able to find it out online. Anyway, what can we now expect for the next 7 days propagation-wise? Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from November 2nd to November 8th, 2013. The 10.7 centimeter flux starts out at 135 November 2nd, 130 November 3rd, November 4th and 5th falling to 128, continuing to fall all week long, on November 6th down to 125, November 7th 115, November 8th 110. An A-index steady at 5 all week long from November 2nd to November 8th, and a steady KP-index steady at 2 from November 2nd to November 8th. Sunspots, numbering 7 total, are observed at this time. 1875 and 79 are at the far east end of the sun, with 1882 through 86 to the moderate west and center of the sun. The sun remains active this week, having offered up an X2 class solar flare. X-rays and UV radiation from the flare ionize the top of our planet's atmosphere. Waves of ionization disturb the normal propagation radio waves over the Americas and the Pacific, possibly having caused an HF communications blackout over the poles. For more, See our radio propagation page at www.pcjmedia.com/RPROP. Back to you, Keith.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan. Before we go, I just want to remind you again that beginning this Sunday, which is November the 3rd, we will be changing frequency for Southeast and East Asia. You'll be able to find the information at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. And while you're there, at our website, you can put /Media Network Plus, all one word, and listen to this edition of the show again or catch past editions. If you wish to let us know what you think of the show and have any story ideas, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Well, I'm going to leave you right now. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. So on behalf of the whole team, 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Yeah.